Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I'd probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. Yeah, this is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thanks for joining us this morning after the Sports Corner. Did a great job this morning as well. Got a little fired up in there, actually. And the microphone here is falling apart, so I'm trying to figure that out. There we go. All right. Good morning. Again, thanks for joining. We're going to have a great morning this morning. I think we're going to do a little tech talk. And maybe do a couple of quick discussions. I'm hoping to get our good friend Jay Garman on for some geek trivia, as well as then some cool sites of the week. We're actually going to do those this week. I promise. I promise. I promise. And then, of course, we'll finish it off with a cool site, or I'm sorry, a podcast-only song of the week. The one thing we are going to be missing today is our good friend Dave Sparky Saganaki. Unfortunately, he's, or fortunately, maybe, I don't know, he's out there driving around, maybe, in his brand new vet right up there in the frosty north up in Canada, so that she keeps telling me is just even a little bit warmer, if not nicer in general than here in Chicago. But you know, we'll let him think that and enjoy his new car. We won't bug him. But you know, he could be driving it. I keep telling you, I'm sure his new car has got Bluetooth in it. He could be driving it around listening to WRLR, even though he's up in Canada. That works now. You can do that. If you are an Android user, you can go anywhere in the world, literally anywhere in the world. Go to Google Play, go to Amazon, type in on the App Store, type in WRLR. You will find the WRLR app. It's out there. It's available. It's in the live. It's running. It's working and doing what it should be doing. And as I said, you can use that anywhere in the world. In fact, we've got people in Azerbaijan who have downloaded this app. People in Turkey. We just added Hungary, of all places, to the list of people that have downloaded. Germany, Italy, Iraq. Yes, Iraq too. Apparently that's okay in Iraq. You can listen to WRLR anywhere. So again, just go to the Android store. I'm kind of proud of it. That was the app that I did create. Now, I know people have been asking already, in fact, wondering when is the iPad app coming, or the iPhone app and all that stuff. People that listen to the show know I'm not much of an Apple guy, so I have to confess I haven't really given it a lot of thought. It took a fair amount of effort to create it for the Android version, so I'm not sure if I'm prepared to kind of switch over and gear up and try to recreate all of that in Swift or whatever I would need to do to put it into the Apple Store. I'm also, too, not a certified Apple developer for the Apple App Store. It's a much longer and more arduous process to get things put up into their store than it is for Google Play, so we'll have to see about that. You can definitely send a note, though, if you want, techtalk@wrlr.fm, if you are interested in that, or go to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. Post some notes up there. I'll post some links on there as well for the apps in case you're not able to find them. I'm not sure if an official announcement has been made on the WRLR website yet, or Facebook page, but I'll make sure at least on the Facebook page that also gets up there. Now that it's, like I said, now that it's actually, it's a real thing. It's happening. So I was hoping, you know, we'd talk to Dave a little bit about that. I know he has been using it off and on, so he may have some input and insight. We did just add some new functionality and feature in addition to just listening to the programs here, anywhere you are in the world with your phone. You can also, too, let the DJs know, did you like this show? Did you not like the show? You can do it, and the feedback shows up. In fact, I've got right up in front of me right now, I've got a page that I have not released to the studio yet that shows a live feed of the mobile users' feedback, letting you know as they do or do not like specific things that they're hearing, the DJs will get notice of that. You can also, too, send emails directly to the studio straight from the app, too, and other sorts of communications. So, good stuff. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. I highly recommend. If you're listening to me now, that's the best way to do it. It really is. Go get the app and do it that way. Anyways, so speaking of driving around, though, too, I don't know if anybody else has heard this or been excited by this, but Google now claims that they are purpose building self-driving cars. They've got roughly about a dozen of them that they've created right now, and they're thinking they're going to throw them out on the public roads maybe this summer. So this is happening. Self-driving cars are really, really happening. They're going to limit these first-gen cars to about 25 miles an hour. They're using the same sort of technology, the same sort of programming and development that they did when they kitted out these Lexus cars that they had over this last year. They've been testing those out. They said, and I hadn't realized it had gone this far, but they've got about 1 million miles under their belt so far with the technology that they use for these self-driving cars. Now these are going to be two-seater pods, and pod is absolutely the correct the correct name for them. If you see them, they look like little bubbles. It's kind of like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Woody Allen and what was the one where he wound up being frozen and waking up like a thousand years later, and then the cars that were driving around there, they look a little bit like that. There's these little bubbles on wheels, and so they're going to be going around. They have been tested on private roads. They do not have a steering wheel or typical car controls. They actually just have a touch screen and a start-stop button. Now, there are going to be pedals inside that you could take control and stop the car if you needed to, you know, with a brake type of pedal and this type of thing. But they're essentially going to be completely autonomous. Now, they also did report, and in one of the articles that I'm reading from is from The Guardian, who had a great little breakdown of everything that's been going on with this. That'd be a good one to look at if you're looking for more information. But they talked about how there have been, of course, reports of accidents. They've got 1 million miles, as I said, on with these self-driving cars. There's been 11 minor traffic incidents so far. That includes all the miles that have been driven with those Lexus, those kitted out Lexus vehicles, and so on. But Chris Urmson, who's the director of Google's self-driving car project, said not once was a self-driving car the cause of that accident. Now, I haven't seen that confirmed by any external source, but he's got to be pretty confident if he's making that statement that is truth. He followed that up. Chris said, even when our software and sensors can detect a sticky situation and take action earlier and faster than an alert human driver, sometimes we won't be able to overcome the realities of speed and distance. Sometimes we'll get hit just waiting for a light to change. And ain't that the truth? I think everybody knows that. I have heard, and I've been talking to people lately with trucks on the roads and things like this. And one of the concerns that I've heard people say is like, hey, yeah, you're going to have a truck on the road. It's self-driving. Then you've got a driver that could help and take over sitting next to it. But if he's sitting there and he's bored, he's just going to fall asleep anyways. And then that car's just driving on its own and you know, anything could happen. My response to that is, that's already happening, but at least then there'd be a robot driving instead of just nobody but this person asleep at the wheel. So I'm very excited about it. People that have listened to the show know that I'm definitely on the side of I see so many bad drivers every day. Please, anything that takes them off the road. And I have a lot more trust in computers and programming and technology for whatever reason. So so take that wherever you want to. Oh man, speaking of safety though, and driving, of course, one of the safer ways to travel always for a very, very long time has been flying. Now, there's been concern, of course, over time with the mobile device usage in the planes and a lot of back and forth. And again, I always fall on the side of hey, if the planes are that fragile, that my little baby cell phone here or iPad is going to take it down, we'd be seeing a lot more of these things falling out of the skies. Now, interestingly, however, on a different, slightly different take on it, though, recently, a high-level security expert was arrested by the FBI. He was arrested not for firing up some Candy Crush on the plane, which, by the way, is going to come included with your version of Windows 10 when you get that. Thank you, Microsoft. But he actually hacked into the in-flight entertainment system and was able to go from that to, he claims, and the FBI has arrested him pending investigation, that he was actually able to take control of some of the flight systems, enough so that he made the plane change its altitude and move from one side off of its flight plan. Obviously, incredibly, incredibly dangerous, incredibly frightening to anyone who would be flying in all this. Interestingly, when you read more into it, this was not... So if this did indeed happen, and it may have, he may have been able to do this, he didn't just do it using the plane's Wi-Fi, understand. He had a specially modified Cat6 cable, which is a special type of networking cable, that he put into or connected into the in-flight system, which has control boxes at in between most seats on a lot of planes. And in order to do that, of course, though, he had to jiggle and wiggle the cap and end of that off. In fact, indeed, they said that there were screws involved. So unscrewing it, taking the cap off, plugging his wires into it, I'm thinking about this happening. You're sitting next to some guy who's doing all this goofiness, and at what point do you go, Miss Stewardess, there's something happening here. Please, help me out. Help me out. I don't know. So I don't know how it happened exactly or if it happened, but apparently once he did that or has done that, and he is a security expert, so he has actually experimented with the plane and the flight software that they use. I guess once he got in there, like I said, he went in through the in-flight entertainment system. This was on a United flight, he claims, and from there was able, using the default passwords and login, which, how many times have you heard, don't leave those admin passwords blank or even the admin username on anything that you have that you want to protect. Apparently he was able to just get right in. So we'll see how that comes together. I don't know. The guy's name is Chris Roberts. So if you see that name coming up in reference from the TSA or the FBI and telling us to watch out for your passengers that maybe cabling into the plane, that's what that's about. So we'll see how that comes. Oh man. Now, he's of course been banned on all subsequent flights, so you won't see Mr. Roberts flying around anywhere anytime soon. Oh, now last week I do want to follow up. This is one thing before we call up our good friend Jay. This is more to do probably with Dave, unfortunately. I read a really, really great article about what we talked about last week, Verizon purchasing AOL. And one of the reasons they were purchasing AOL is, surprisingly to a lot of people, that they have a very solid and stable dial-up business. The dial-up business supports, it was like 2.5 million people, and that actually results in quite a bit of revenue for them. And we were laughing and joking last week, of course, that, I mean, who's using dial-up still? Come on, you know. And there are people, of course, I think Jay might have brought it up, there are people, of course, that live in rural areas and areas where you just can't get band, you know, broadband yet, and this is a way to go about it. Well, there's been some articles and a flurry of sort of support for these dial-up users, and also too for AOL, identifying some really interesting thoughts and things about it. One of which is that really AOL is not, in, you know, as its primary selling point, saying we're selling you dial-up access. What they're doing is they're selling a full membership service. Now, it is geared at the older folk, no question about it, because if you look at what this service includes, it includes complimentary prep and update of your wills, living wills, and power of attorney through a network of experienced attorneys. Also a discounted AARP membership, as you know, that's the, for people who are getting close to that retirement age. So things like this, McAfee Security Suite, but a bunch of other things too. Some of this is really not that far out of line. 15 gigs of storage. And 50 4x6 prints per year with Photo Bucket to store, share, and edit your favorite photos. I mean, you know, that's not a bad deal. And of course, way down on the bottom of the list is fast and reliable, unlimited dial-up service with 6,000 plus nationwide access numbers, all available through AOL's desktop software. So though it may be in decline, and though the number of dial-up users, or even maybe those membership offer users, are going to be continually reducing as our broadband access becomes easier and easier to get to, I think the point was made, and made well, and I'm reading one of the articles I'm reading this about is on VentureBeat, that really that dial-up and membership service serves a purpose. And hats off to AOL, rather than just saying, hey, who cares about dial-up? We're not making really that much off of it, and whatever, and just kind of letting it die, which we've seen Google do over and over and over again, and they're about to do it again with Google Plus, by the way. They said, hey, we can make this into something that people will actually get value out of and use. Maybe not a lot of people, but enough. And that's what they've done. So it'll be interesting to see now what Verizon does with it as they take over. We've seen Yahoo purchase and kill things over and over and over again. I hope Verizon does not fall into that type of activity. But, I guess there's just no way to know till it happens. Speaking of no way to know things, I never know what the answer to the Geek Trivia question is each week. We actually had a phone call. Someone making sure wanted to see that we did indeed get the Geek Trivia question happening this week. So I want to make sure we connect with Jay, bring him on, and have a little discussion. Hopefully he's around.
Hello.
Good morning. Good morning. You are around. I was just saying, I hope he's there, and you are.
You can't get rid of me that easily.
No. And not that we've tried, but if we did, I've had people say the same about me, actually, is no matter what we do, he just keeps coming back. So...
but how are we doing this morning, Mike?
Well, not too bad. I was just telling people a little bit earlier, we're missing Dave today. He's out roaming around the countryside in Canada, apparently, in his brand new vet. But I was also saying, though, I hope while he's doing that, he's got the new WRLR mobile Android app fired up and listening to us. It's out there. It's available. You just have to search WRLR on the Google Play or the Amazon App Stores, and you can fire it right up. And I just finished up creation, and this is not for public consumption, but behind the scenes, there's a website where we can actually see in real time when people give us the thumbs up or the thumbs down for the show and for the conversations that we're having. So if you like what you're hearing and you're listening on the app, thumb it up. Come on, thumb up right now, man. I'm watching. I'll see it happen. Sadly, nobody is. Nobody's doing it. So,
Well, have you promoted the app, Mike? Because contrary to what Field of Dreams have taught you, just because you built it does not mean that they will come.
Yeah. Well, this is true. Now, there was supposedly a press release. Now, I saw the press release text. And I saw that it was sent out by our studio chief, Commander-in-Chief, Mr. Krifko. But I haven't seen the actual that actually come to fruition yet. I'm also, too, going to make sure I haven't seen it actually publicized on the WRLR website. So I'm going to make sure that happens this week. So hopefully, yeah, hopefully. But all right, we've got people from Azerbaijan that have downloaded this app already, in Iraq, of all places. So I'm big in Azerbaijan, apparently.
Well, that or we have some listeners who are really good at Tor.
That's a good point. I did not think of that. That did not occur to me. I was trying to figure out. I was like, Turkey, Iraq, India, Hungary. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense now. Now that you mentioned that.
It's much more likely that you and I have followers who don't want to be identified as followers than we have followers who are outside the country.
Yeah,
it's much more likely they're too embarrassed for even the NSA to know that they are listening to us.
That's right. They're like, oh, geez, I would love to listen to the show, Mike, but I know that there's a guy at the NSA. He's going to laugh at me. I can't do it.
So, I can't be judged by the secret police.
Yeah.
Anyone else I can handle, but you can't be mocked about the dudes at Langley. It's not okay.
That's right. Exactly. Oh, man. So now, the big race is done, but we got the Preakness coming up and things like that. Do you get into any of the follow-up races?
Not really. There's a little bit of tacit following around here just because there's not been a Triple Crown winner in 35 years or so. So it's a big deal just to see if whoever won the Derby, which in this case is American Pharoah, could win the Preakness. But if American Pharoah does not win the Preakness, nobody cares about the Belmont at all.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, now, and when does the Preakness go off? Is that this weekend?
Today, I think it's like around 3 or 4 o'clock, but don't hold me to that because I'm really paralyzed by not caring.
Oh, yeah. I'm a little bit in the same boat, too. I wasn't sure how deep the horse racing love went out there with the other stuff. But one thing I know we were talking about that you may be excited about is those automated cars. Our Google claims they're going to be on the road in California by the end of summer. And so Dave's Corvette is going to, the stock in that is just going to drop like a rock, I think. Hope he's not investing too much in it. Those will be coming out right around the corner. I don't know. I'm excited about it. I was telling people I'm excited about it. I think there's virtually no reason I've been given that would make me think that an automated car would be less safe than the people that I see driving around me most of the time.
I agree. So, first thing, there's two things to remember. So there's actual multiple levels of driver assistance certification. And I believe what Google's going to put on the road is NHTSA level 3, which is the car can drive itself, but there must be a driver present and able to take over in the event of computer failure. They have an NHTSA level 4 certification, which is people are superfluous. They are road drones. And they have not certified any, to my knowledge, for any public streets. Google has built level 4 vehicles, as I have at Carnegie Mellon and a few other places, if I remember correctly, but they're only allowed on private tracks. But they are legal for use. So it's basically, passenger drones, which is an odd thing to say. But given what I know about the median driver skill level, I'm pretty okay given, a Core i7 a shot here.
I agree. It's kind of an interesting point. I think that'll maybe be, I would love to see this as a little bit more than just a publicity stunt, but I think it'll probably be at least a publicity stunt at some point, is to have one of the automated cars actually go through the driving test, have to do one of those, the full-blown DMV sort of deals where the instructor, especially, with some of the voice reco stuff, it's getting close enough there that I think you could say, okay, Google car, parallel park. I don't think we're that far off from that. So it'd be kind of cool. Now, these ones that are coming out are only going to be going top speed right now of 25 miles an hour, too. So there'll be ample time for people to get out of the way and for that, passenger driver sort of person to slam the brakes on if necessary.
Right. And remember, we've talked about this in previous episodes, the way the Google cars work for their independent navigation is they take, not the cars, Google takes hyper-accurate street-level maps of all the places the cars are allowed to go. And by hyper-accurate, I mean down to the inch of where streets end and begin and where traffic signals are and so on and so forth. So it doesn't have to automatically use its radar and LIDAR, which is light-based radar for those who don't know, to build a map on the fly and then figure out what's a road and what's not. It already has that map in place. It knows where to look for traffic signals. It knows where sidewalks begin and end. So then all it has to do is say, here's my environment, what objects are in motion, and what is different about this environment from my baseline map, which is a much simpler computational task. So the barrier for Google rolling this out nationwide is going to be getting that level of map and maintaining that level of map consistently nationwide, which I think is going to be exceedingly difficult. What I expect is going to happen immediately or in the nearer term is they're going to go and get some sort of certification with the Highway Transit Authority, and they're going to go do major interstates first. And they're going to get level 3 certified on that, and we're going to get to the scenario I've talked about a billion times where they do overland trucking logistics, where there is a driver presence, but really the driver isn't necessary until they exit the highway, at which point it will pull over and stop and say, driver, I'm ready for you to do last mile navigation. And then from there, they'll fan out to major cities, and it'll be a lot like when those of us are old enough remember when broadband internet rolled out. You know, it started out in 2 or 3 places, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, L.A., and then it slowly fanned out to the rest of the country.
Yeah. And speaking of the trucks, too, I mean, there's so many cool things, I think, that'll come with that. You know, dedicated truck or autonomous vehicle lanes where there can actually be, inter-vehicle communications so that they, they're on the same path, they track. Maybe they're not going 75, 80 miles an hour, but they won't have to because there just won't be any reason for them not to go that consistent 45 or whatever the safe speed is determined with no changes and no slowdown and no traffic jams and so on. I had some older relatives of mine. We were talking about this the other day, and they said, I already shared this on air too. But they said that they were very concerned about the trucks, even with the driver there, because they said, well, yeah, but that robot driver is going to be going and going, and the one that's supposed to be making sure that things are safe, he's going to be so bored he'll just fall asleep, and then there won't be anyone driving it except for the robot. And I said, well, yeah, but that's already happening. But without the robot, so
exactly,
it's got to be better. It's just got to be better. That's a really interesting point, though. Too is that last mile, like you said, just like with the broadband, that last mile piece is going to be sort of the most difficult to sort of complete and to make happen. I think once some of these cars are out there, people are just going to get more comfortable with them and all that. Tesla's coming out with their newer vehicle now, which is going to make it into, I think, more of a mainstream vehicle. It's going to be priced around $35,000 for their newer vehicle. A lot of the same technology is in the more expensive Tesla Roadsters. And at $35,000, I think you're going to see these vehicles just cropping up everywhere. It's much more accessible, and with their ability to update the software over time, the 2020 year as a timeline for that Elon Musk said for getting a lot of automated cars on the road, I don't think that's too unrealistic anymore. That might actually, we might be there. We might get there quickly.
Well, the thing about automated cars is I do think the highways are where they're going to happen first, because contrary to what Google does in Mountain View with their hypermaps, you can build a pretty good NHTSA level 3 vehicle. In fact, that some of the automated trucks, like I think from Mercedes-Benz and a few other places, have done this, where you can – highway is such a much more discreet environment. There aren't crosswalks. There aren't stoplights. It's just basically – if you have the right kind of stripes painted, that they have the right kind of reflection, you can build a pretty much lane-holding, impact-avoiding vehicle for the highway with way fewer, you know, requirements. Because all it basically needs is radar and LIDAR and some infrared lasers to find the lane markers, and it will not hit what's in front of it. You know, it can tell the distance from what's in front of it. It can apply the brakes, and it can do basically automated cruise control on that, and it can hold its lane, and that's incredibly simple to do. It's just you've got to have all kinds of failover states, and the failover state for that is you can't just dead stop on the highway.
Yeah.
It has to know if a shoulder is there to pull over, or it has to have a driver that can take over and make decisions when you fall outside its logic tree.
Yeah.
Which to me is perfect. That's like cruise control 2.0 for those of us that do long road trips, like someone I know who has to drive from Chicago to Minneapolis occasionally. Or overland truckers, like that's the big deal. And the truck that Mercedes-Benz, I believe, came out with, its intention is not to replace the driver. It's for the truck to take over if the driver falls asleep.
Yeah.
So if it has like that face recognition stuff, if the driver nods off or is distracted, the truck knows to take over rather than the reverse, where the truck is driving, and if the computer fails, the driver's expected to be on standby. It's the driver's in control. If the driver fails, we've got a robot backup.
Yeah, yeah, and keeping them straight and narrow. Well, and that those long trips, I mean, that's where I'm always most thinking about, and I make frequent trips to Minneapolis myself. I have family there. That's where I'm most frequently thinking about, gosh, wouldn't it be so nice, you know, if, as I said, like, if there was a lane, you go into one lane, and it's the instead of being the, what do they call it now, where you've got more than two people in your car, express lane.
HOV lane, the carpool lane?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of the carpool lane, it's the automated or autonomous vehicle lane. And so you get into that first lane, you push the button that says, you know, throw me into autopilot. And then it automatically merges you up into the autonomous vehicle lane, and then you're done. You sit back and fire up the fire up some Candy Crush or whatever it is you want to do, and hang out until it starts beeping at you and telling you that it's going to take you off for your exit coming up, and that you're going to have to take over again. I would love to see something like that, and just take all of that effort out of the process of getting places.
I completely agree, and what I think the big win, one of the unexpected big winners of automated driving is going to be online video and online games. Because all that time we spend in transit today, we can't really do anything that's visually interactive.
Yeah.
You know, we can all do radio or music of some kind, talk radio, music, whatever, but you can't do anything visually interactive. The second you are still in a car but don't have to look around, it's basically personalized subway. And then all that personal video games, stuff you use your eyes and hands with, that comes back into play. And that's the stuff, if I was a tech investor, I would go long on, is, mobile gaming, mobile video, that sort of thing. Because, frankly, I don't think we're going to see the end in the next 30 years of car ownership. I think we're going to see the end of the multi-car family. We're all still going to have that one vehicle that we use because we want to, you know, totally on demand, totally spec to our needs. But, you know, we don't need a second car. Like, all right, I can put the kids on the auto bus, or, you know, if we need the main car from the families together, but if we're doing the one-off one-person commute, I can get a one-person smart car to show up at my door, and it takes mom or dad to work or that sort of thing. And we don't need two cars. We don't need to store two cars. Or we get into something like with our friend Dave, where we have the classic Corvette for our fun car when we actually want to be involved in driving and have a driving experience. But our day-to-day commuter car or our going to the grocery car is an on-demand called electric auto drive vehicle, and you just, you know, you get on your Zipcar membership or your Ubercar membership and say, I need to go grocery shopping, so I need a mini SUV, you know, and I need to hear it this time, I'm going to need it for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll take longer to get to that. Like you said, I think that the personal ownership of cars is going to be there. I absolutely agree too, that I, especially with these longer trips, you know, I know there's been some talk about, oh, you know, you could just slap on your Oculus Rift or something like that. But I think that the personal electronic usage of that sort in a vehicle is going to be less common, at least at first, as opposed to sort of seeing the way that right now, if you've got an SUV, a lot of these SUVs, they know that there's kids in them, so they have these drop-down screens for the kids to keep the kids occupied. But I could really see that just being the whole front windshield. You know, once you're in that autonomous lane, the whole front windshield becomes a display screen for you. And so the whole family can watch, you know, whatever it is that they want to pull up on Netflix, or you can split and have side screens with the other windows and things and drive on from there. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting year, I think, for this. I think we're going to see a lot of new things. I think we're going to be talking about this a lot, particularly as we come into late summer and early fall and some of those things pull through. And it sounds like, not to have too brutal of a segue here, and no pun intended with segue, but the people will be able to talk about it more freely on Reddit. I was just reading, this is kind of exciting too, in a different way, that Reddit is now putting out a real anti-harassment policy, and they're trying to actively curb cyberbullying, which Reddit is a fabulous resource, and there's tons of great stuff and lots of great information and opinions and feedback and all sorts of good stuff going on there. But it's also been known for a long time that it has a problem, which is it's not a real safe place for people to go and express opinions many times.
Not at all. It is, there's a guy who has run online communities, and I forget exactly who coined this phrase, and I'm a big believer in it, is in the absence of policy, politics will occur. So if you don't set rules, the mob will set its own. Mm-hmm. And mob rule is never kind, it's never rational, and it's never the best side of anybody.
Yep. And that's pretty much what we've seen with Reddit. You know, there really have been. And one of the policy, and they mentioned in their post, is that they're defining harassment now as systematic and or continued actions to torment or demean someone. And, you know, I mean, sad to say, that is just not an uncommon situation right now on Reddit and some of the other you know, less managed sites similar to that.
Right. Well, it's so easy to make an account on Reddit because all you need is an email address. It's very easy to maintain anonymity, so it's trivial to come in there and let your worst self out and go bully others. And like, I'm not a huge proponent of the overall broken window theory, but there is some truth to the notion of if you become known as a place where bullies can get away with stuff, bullies will seek out your place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We all grew up with that one playground or that one park or that one local bar that you knew not to go into because the only people who went in there are people looking for trouble.
Yeah.
And there are parts of Reddit, not all of Reddit, but since you can create an infinite number of subreddits, there are plenty of subreddits where that is what has happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. And you know, it's kind of one of those chicken and the egg questions, as in, you know, do people like that flock there because there's no controls, or is it just that everybody that doesn't enjoy that environment leaves very shortly thereafter? I definitely fell into the latter category. You know, I would fall into some of these subreddits and be like, oh, this is a cool place. You know, I'm really interested in finding out about this. And then seeing some of the commentary and feedback and be like, oh, okay, well, no, this is not my where I need to be. So so I just don't know. Now, another interesting point here, I had not realized this until reading about their new harassment policies, was that their interim CEO right now is Ellen Pao, Now, she was the individual who just recently, we were talking about this no more than a few weeks ago or so, lost her very, very high profile gender discrimination lawsuit against the venture capital firm. Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember what the name of them, the venture
capital. Anderson Horowitz, I believe.
That was it. That was it. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. And so she certainly, even though she lost that case, or maybe even more so because she lost the case, is certainly very in tune and in touch with the, you know, the dangers that can exist in an environment where there are no controls, or where the controls are very spotty or lacking for individuals. And hopefully the goal for most people is that we do want to see a freedom of expression and communication, and a certain level of safety for everyone, whether they, you know, are part of a majority, a minority, or, you know, nobody even knows, but they just want to say something. I think that's okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And to be clear about that lawsuit, it wasn't that inappropriate behavior did not happen, is that it did not rise to the level of institutional a sanction of the inappropriate behavior. So, you know, there's a lot of gray area in there, but basically what the lawsuit found is there wasn't enough evidence that it was effectively a de facto policy of harassment or an environment of harassment. But it was very clear that inappropriate things went on, which is sort of an allegory to Reddit. Reddit doesn't go out and say, be a jackass. Reddit just says, we're not going to make any or until recently, we're not going to make any effort to determine if you're being one and if we should do anything about it.
Yes, exactly. And they are, and so now they're changing that. So that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how successful they are at that. And I think, you know, unfortunately, one of the dangers with that, not for people frequenting Reddit, but for Reddit themselves as an organization, is that once you put in place a policy like this, there are expectations of you. And the expectation is that you're going to try your best to kind of keep to that policy and you're going to enforce it. And if there's abuses and other things happening within those subreddits that are well known and the ones that aren't well known for those type of issues, you know, Reddit management is going to be held accountable to some degree now, where they have not been in the past.
Absolutely. So, to me, I liken it to it. If you are running a restaurant and you train your staff not to harass or be jerk to the customers, that's fine. But what you can't also do is allow, say, in the dining area of a McDonald's, allow customers to become unruly with each other. It is beholden to the staff to remove unruly customers at a McDonald's, because if you don't, people who aren't jerks don't want to come into that McDonald's. And Reddit has sort of had the unruly dining room forever, and now they're saying to the manager of the McDonald's, if I find out you're not throwing jerk customers out, I'll throw you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, well, and as I said, there'll be some time to see how that all kind of comes together. One last topic before we do, we got to do our geek trivia and other stuff too. I don't know if you do, but I am a big fan and user of my Starbucks card. Also, too, of course, my Starbucks app on my phone. And I don't know, did you see the recent hubbub about, and I'm going to use air quotes on this, that the Starbucks cards were hacked and the Starbucks app was hacked and all this, and people were taking money out of people's accounts with their auto reload function turned on and so on. Is that something that you would run across, or do you use a Starbucks card yourself?
I don't, because I'm not a coffee drinker. So I don't, because of my migraines, I don't drink caffeine. So Starbucks is not a place for me, and it's for my wife. But no, I had not run across that. But it's not surprising to me, because, and I'm going to go deep into the nerd well here, the board didn't protect their sleep functions, and so because they didn't think it was high priority. And I suspect whatever the card processing backend was for Starbucks was not what they considered a vulnerable area. You know, of all the places they thought to protect, it didn't occur to them that, like, they should make sure you couldn't fake a reload on your Starbucks card.
No, it's not. You know what? And this is why I use those air quotes. It's not even that tricky. That's why I said, you know, hack in quotes. Really, all that's happening here, this is insane. All that's happening is somebody's getting like a copy of the barcode symbol, essentially, from someone that they know is set up with an auto reload, and then they go to a Starbucks and they buy a bunch of Starbucks gift cards, several pounds of coffee.
They're counterfeiting cards, basically.
Exactly. So that's why I wanted people to be aware of this, is that you have to be careful reading these stories sometimes, even in the tech news, where they want to lead with these titles that just grab you and go, you know, hackers are taking your Starbucks account over and things like this. And then you read into it and it's like, no, they're not. That's not hackers. That's like maybe a bunch of kids, you know, or if it is hackers, it's not like they've broken into Starbucks. They've just figured out a way to fake out these IDs, counterfeit the cards, essentially. Now you are implicitly protected, even with the auto reload function, not only by your credit card, which of course you can dispute any charges with, but also to Starbucks has said themselves that they have controls in place that if you alert them and they look at it and it doesn't seem legit, they're more than happy. They'll pull all the charges back, and they just absorb that at this time. And they don't have anything in place like credit cards do. And you're right about this, Jay, absolutely nailed it, was that they don't have anything in place right now that would keep someone from making multiple purchases very rapidly in different places. That's just not being tracked at this time. Whereas, for example, your Discover card, Discover is local to us here, so I'll use them as an example. If you take your Discover card and tried to buy, a pair of shoes, a tank of gas, and, here in Chicago, and then at the same time that same Discover card was being used in Louisville to also buy another pair of shoes and some coffee at Starbucks, that would raise up some flags, and some of those transactions would automatically be stopped, and then you would get an alert on your phone. That does not happen with your Starbucks card at this time.
Well, because they don't have the staff to do that, or the algorithm to do that kind of fraud monitoring has never been necessary, but also they don't have the physical controls on the cards that the payment card industry, PCI, is adopting. Actually, October 15th of this year, that's the EMV, and I'm going to forget what it stands for, standard comes out, which is some of us have credit cards today with a little microchip in them. You've seen them. I think Amex was the first one, but most people have at least one of their cards with that little gold microchip on it somewhere. That's a little mini computer that actually runs encryption software, so that every time you scan it, the encrypted algorithm spits out a new verification code, which is paralleled on the back end of the payment processing service. So they know that that's the real card. Even if you faked, if you got a copy of the chip, you couldn't get a copy of that encryption algorithm because it's unique to that card. Because it was very common, bear in mind, the magnetic stripe on credit cards I think goes back to the 60s in terms of the basis of the technology. It is trivial now to go do a read write and copy the magnetic stripe, and people, they got very good at making counterfeit credit cards, going to Best Buy, buying a $4,000 television, and then disappearing because they went to another town and then pawned it and got cash. And it was a very common fraud. So the card industry has gone to EMV, which is you don't swipe your cards anymore. You quote-unquote dip them. So you actually, you know, put them into a card scanner where the chip is enclosed, or you do near-field communication where you tap the card to the card scanner, and it will verify that specific card, so you can't get counterfeit cards anymore. And on October 15th, the PCI group, which is Amex, Discover, Visa, and MasterCard, have said, if we have issued an EMV card for this type of card, and they haven't done it for all of them, and you don't have an EMV card reader, any counterfeit card fraud, we don't pay. We are no longer fraud liable. Because it used to be the cards were liable for all fraud, And if somebody faked a card, as long as you were PCI compliant and your process was like you proved you weren't writing down card numbers and then putting them into a carrier pigeon and then throwing them over the ocean or something, they would meet the fraud. As of October 15th, if you have an EMV card and your merchant doesn't have an EMV card reader and they get card fraud, guess what? Target, you're paying for all those fake purchases because Visa's not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I suspect that, like, in the next 5-6 years, things like the Starbucks card are going to go to the same technology for these very reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that a lot of that technology is going to be a lot cheaper now, too. I mean, one of the holdups for that, of course, has been just exactly that issue, is that once you start pushing it onto the retailers, that responsibility, which arguably is where it should be, potentially anyways, there's a, kind of an uphill battle, because then the retailers, who typically are, of course, much less, have less resources than the large credit card companies and processors, have to invest in the technology in order to take these new types of payment, as well as maintain the old type of payment systems, whether it be cash or non-EMV cards and things like this. But man, you know, the technology is just taking off. Everything seems to be getting really cheap lately. There was just recently, I was reading an article about $9 computers, literally $9 chip computers, similar to like what the Raspberry Pi has been built around, which those are about $35 if you want to get the top line ones, or $25 if you want to get one of the slightly less powerful ones. And it's like, boy, at $9, even if you do have to wrap some other hardware around it and do some other things to make it an NFC compliant piece of equipment, that's still ridiculously cheap that you can put that in place very easily and really make, you know, take advantage of this stuff.
Well, it's got to be PCI verified hardware, which is not cheap. And since it's now this whole, it's this Y2K all over again, because you have to have EMV hardware and there's a mandate for it. We're at max pricing right now, like a top of the line video screen embedded keypad and digital signature EMV card reader station is $400.
Yuck. All right. I got to break it now, because we're right at the end of the day here. So I actually had someone leave a voicemail making sure that we were going to do the Geek Trivia of the Week. So I cannot let this go by. So Geek Trivia from last week, we were actually almost touching a little bit around it a couple seconds ago with the LiDAR and laser discussion. What was the question and what is the answer from last week?
So what was the original technical term for a laser before the term laser was coined by Theodore Maiman in 1960, actually a little bit before that? And the term was optical maser. So masers were microwave amplification by stimulated emission of radiation, and they predated lasers by 5 or 7 years. They got really good at collimating microwave beams. And when they first theorized that they could go up the EM spectrum and make it more useful to use visible spectra of light to do this collimation of coherent beams, they called them optical masers as opposed to lasers. When Theodore Maiman did the first optical spectrum maser in May of 1960, he called it a laser light amplification. And he envisioned that every subset of the EM spectrum would have its own acronym. So gamma ray would be grazers, and X-rays would be zasers, and ultraviolet light would be UVasers. And the exact opposite has happened. Lasers were so popular, and the acronym was so compelling, that we now say microwave laser instead of maser. And we say X-ray laser and UV laser and all that sort of thing. Laser has become the term of art, even though it's not just light, it's electromagnetic radiation.
Oh, man. Well, and, you know, yeah, as you said, it just it rolls off your tongue. And I think that, yeah, once people start adopting a term, it's really, really tough to break them away from it. It's kind of like, you know, my mom and dad, they still refer to their remote control as a clicker. And boy, remote controls haven't actually physically clicked and made a clicking sound in order to change channels on your TV for probably 60 years now. So
Well, Mike, we haven't dialed a phone with a radial dial in 30 years. We still call it dialing a number.
This is true. I don't know why. We hang on to those things forever. Well, like I said, we're running out of time, though. I got Rob Shutt first, Robbie Rigel on deck. What should we be thinking about for next week's Geek Trivia?
So 35 years ago this week, Windows 3.0 hit the market. And it was the first version of Windows ever to come pre-installed on OEM PCs. So the question is, how much hard drive space did the original pre-installed version of Windows 3.0 take up?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh my gosh, yeah. And you know, I still remember being able to install even Windows 95 with floppies, and 98, I think you could do floppies too. And after a certain point, then all of a sudden it went to CDs, and it was like, oh, cool, CDs. Wow, how much space? It's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be shockingly little. Great question. Like I said, I've got to cut us out though. Rob Shutfors, Robbie Rigel, he is ready to rock and roll here. Jay, thanks so much for joining us again this week, and we'll hopefully be talking to you next week.
All right, take care, buddy.
Yeah, have a good one. Thanks, Jay. Jay Garman. Go to jgarman.net. You can find out more there. I was not kidding. Rob Rigel, Rob Shutt First is on deck here. I'm going to leave you with a couple of little spots and all that other stuff. I'm going to make a quick shout out to say that, to remember, this is a volunteer radio station. We do and will continue to survive based on the wonderful support of our community and people just like you who are listening. Even if you're in Azerbaijan, you can go on to WRLR.fm, and there's easy ways to find out to contribute and help us out as a station, keep us on the air. Right now, I'm going to play you, like I said, some spots. Then you'll be listening to Rob Shutt First, Robbie Rigel. This is Tech Talk, though, on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned.